Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
Good morning, Roxy Soxy.
Oh, good morning, Tam. Tam, how are you, my friend?
Are you still in that weird bedroom that you like to shoot?
You mean the one that our daughter has taken over and has now posted all of her photos, as you can see, on our bed now?
I love her
pillow and her toys. I'm like, maybe David and I should actually swap and move to her bedroom. And she stays in here. So we can finally
I do that. I had a big fight with my 9-year-old last night and I felt like such a crap mom because she was like, I need the light on in the bedroom, and wakes up our 3-year-old. She's like, or I'm going to sleep with you. And I was like, you are not sleeping with me. I said, I will lock you in that room before you sleep with me. I don't care. I'm one of those moms. Like, I don't want to sleep. I love my kids and it would be great if they like snuggled and just stayed there, but they don't. They flop and they kick me in the face, and like, it's just a horrible experience. And then I'm mean the next day because I'm exhausted and I don't make good decisions and I'm eating crap and like, I feel crap and like, I'm not doing it. Sleep is so important.
Yes. Sleep is so important. And you're right, because the kids, they start laying like, you know, sideways and they take over the entire bed. Yeah. I did see this mom. Okay. It was one of my reality shows I was watching.
One of them. 962 that you watched.
Perhaps it was on, you know, Bravo. Who knows? One of the moms, though, she and her husband put locks on the outside of their kids' doors. So when the kids were put down to bed, they would lock the doors from the outside. So
I think that's kind of called abuse, but we'll let that go.
Would you do that, you think?
My husband the other day, I probably am going to have to cut this out because I'll get all these like messages. He said to our 9-year-old, he's like, I'm locking you in the gym because we have a gym here. And I was like, you can't do that. Like, this day and age, you got to like talk about your feelings, right? Like, back in my parents, you just smack me on the butt and would call it a day. But here it's like, how are you feeling? Let's talk about your emotions. Like, what caused you to like have the outburst? So my husband was like, I'm locking you in. And I was like, we don't do that. We do gentle parenting, Sean. Have you forgotten? And he's like, no, she needs to learn. So he put her in there for like a second, and then she was screaming like, I don't want to be locked in here. And then we took her out, but we did for a second. We did.
Gosh, well, kids these days, all it takes is 2 minutes. Back in our day, it was like 2 hours in there, you know?
My husband said his parents used to be like, go pick your switch, like whatever, pick a switch, or I don't know what it was, like, and make sure it's not the small one.
God, that's so Southern. Yes.
That's really horrible.
That's so Southern. That actually, my mom had the same experience too. Like, pick the switch that you're going to get smacked with, you know?
That's not, you know what? We'll just chalk it up to the fact that we're all learning. Generational trauma is getting better.
That's
so
what
let's
for,
talk
right?
to these next two guests who I've loved for so much. I talk about manifestation all the time, and I'm like, I've manifested them for so long that I think I actually reached out like a year ago and they never saw my message. And then I was like, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm just gonna like create funny content, so all the people who like see my messages, at some point I will be on their For You page, like at some point, right? If it's good enough, I will be seen. So I was like, just create funny content. And then at some point, someone will watch your video and then they'll be like, oh, she's kind of funny. And then when I slide into their DMs, they'll know who I am. That has happened. That happened with Jenny Mullen. And it might have happened with these next two guests because I tried a year ago. It didn't work. But that's what you've got to keep on keeping on, Roxy. That's my motto.
That's right.
So who do we have today that I manifested?
This is so exciting because I don't know if growing up for you, Tamin, but like for my family, and I'm sure you guys were probably like this too. Every time the Olympics would come on, we would gather around like for 2-3 weeks, you know, the duration of the thing, and like watch, because back then, you know, there was no social media. It was like you watched TV and you saw, you know, things transpire in real time. And I remember the Summer Olympics was always my favorite. Yeah. And watching the gymnastics especially.
Oh, it's always the gymnastics are the best. The gymnastics and the swimming are honestly,
yes.
Like, I don't even want to, what are the other ones? Like shot put? Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't care. Yes. I really don't care.
Yes.
And I just want to see that. Or ice skating. Or gymnastics or swimming. The rest,
no. Those are the heroes of like the Summer Olympics is the gymnastics, ice skating for the Winter Olympics. Mm-hmm. But I remember watching our next guest win the gold and like how amazing that was. Yeah, crying. I'm like, oh my God, she's so amazing.
Yeah.
All of that. So, I mean, we're so excited to have her on. She's an Olympic gold and silver medalist.
And her husband is not too shabby either.
Exactly. Her husband is a former NFL player. He is so athletic. He's achieved so many things as well. They're like this athletic power couple, right?
It's like, why do we even have them on? I feel bad about myself already.
Now
like,
I need to really go hit the gym.
I need to lock myself in the gym and work
out. So without further ado, let's welcome Sean Johnson East and Andrew East. Welcome.
Thank you. We're pumped to be here. Damn it. Actually, so not only did you make funny content for a year in order to get our attention, you didn't DM. You actually had to go through me.
Oh, no. I was smart about it. I already DM'd a year ago. And then I was like, I'm going to get to the husband. I'm going to see how we do this. And then I always go like to see people's follow list. This is how you do it. And then I'm like, oh, we have a mutual friend. I'm like, I should have figured it out. There's
not gonna lie. We've been like sending your content to each other for a year.
Oh,
really? Yes.
But simultaneously purposely ignoring your message. That you sent that's a fine. Year ago.
Yeah. I feel like that's like my whole life. I feel like that's my like I'm like, I just sent you this, you watched it and shared it, but you never responded. Yes. Anyway, we are so grateful to have you guys. We adore you. I just want to know, like, what is a typical day like for you guys? Like when you you've got kids, you guys are still young, you're younger than us. So like, what is a typical day like in your household, in your relationship with the kiddos? Is it just tell me how it goes?
Should I recap what's happened so far today?
Besides your emotions throughout all those, that'd be great.
I think that's the best part. We woke up at like 6:30. We had coffee outside on the porch while the babies were sleeping. Got to like our daily devotionals, everything. Babies wake up. And then all, you know, crap happens. He took the babies for like an hour while I made lunches, made breakfast, packed their bags, got their like everything ready for the day. Then all of a sudden we got in an argument for no good reason. No good reason. Yeah.
Thank you.
I was like, what was the argument about? Because I feel like mine's better today.
Yeah.
What was the argument about?
Yeah, I was jealous that he had the kids and he was playing with them while I was stuck doing all the stuff. And he's like, I was trying to help you. And I was like, sure, whatever. Then we dropped them off at school. We went and got coffee again, a lot of coffee. And then went straight to our meetings. We had meetings up until this, which we ran over for. And we have meetings for the next 3 hours.
Oh my goodness.
And then we have to get ready for, we're evidently throwing a party at our house tomorrow that we have to get ready for.
I'll be there.
You would have been invited, but we just figured out that you're living in town. So sorry.
Yeah, we're neighbors. It's fine. No clue.
So funny. Well, it's amazing too. Like once you become parents, it's like all hands on deck. You just don't realize like how much effort and like how much energy it is to kind of like, and you do things like, correct me if I'm wrong. Like before I had kids, I'm like, okay. I mean, I thought I had a packed schedule, but like, then you have kids and you're like, oh my God, like I did 30 things today. You're like,
yeah.
Whereas before, I mean, how do you guys sort of like maneuver all that? Are you guys like both like all hands on deck all the time? Or do you guys like, how do you guys do it?
We're all hands on deck all the time.
Yeah. We're pretty good teammates though. Like there's definitely
teammates again.
What?
I'm kidding.
I'm so glad you guys had a fight because I just had a fight before this podcast.
I'm so glad you just admitted that it was over nothing.
Like we're all getting the same good energy. My fight was about the fact that my husband has been away for 2 days and he walked in and he didn't greet me because he was on the phone. I was like, excuse me?
Yeah.
So who wins? Do you guys think that it was my husband should have been like, hey, Tim, how's it going? I'm on the phone. Or do you think it's my fault because I should have waited till he was off the phone?
Hmm.
He shouldn't have come in until he was off the phone.
I agree with that.
Ooh.
I'm in line with you. Like if Sean walks in the room and is just on her phone, like, and I'm like, pissed. I'm like, yo, yeah. I'm freaking here.
But
right?
I will walk around the house all day and you'll be on your computer and you won't even look up and I'll be like, I'm here too. I am a human being.
Yeah.
Who won though? Tell us.
And I don't know if you guys too, if you feel this, but like when your husband or your significant other returns from a trip, mine just returned from Toronto Film Festival. Mm-hmm. And my daughter and I, we have everything like in a certain sync.
Yes.
Like, we're very much in a good pattern. He comes in and like mucks everything up. Like it's like, he wants to do things his way. And like, you know, the whole dynamic changes. Is this like just my, or do you guys feel the same?
I would say we feel exactly the same way. We, without fail, I don't know why. I think it's just like the tension of like things changing. Mm-hmm. We always get in a fight as we're like headed for a trip. So if one of us is leaving, we always get in a fight. And I think it's just because you turn in, I don't want to say you turn into different people when you're away from each other, but like you learn how to be solo.
Yeah. So, and selfish in a way too.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I think, and I agree. Like, so who won the fight? He did. Before this, I was like, I'm sorry. I'm just like, you know, having my own issues today. Because I do think, maybe this is a blanketed statement, but I don't know. You said that it wasn't Sean who does this, but I feel like I need a little more attention in certain areas of our relationship, and my husband does not. His love language is leave me alone. I want my time alone and then I'll come back to you. And if I've had my own space, I can give what you need. I'm like, touch me all the time, kiss me, love me, tell me I'm cute, tell me I'm this, tell me I'm amazing, which I think I need to go to more therapy. But like, I want constant attention because I don't want it from the world. I want it from my spouse. And I think that it's really hard in relationships when you have different types of love languages. So what do you guys think?
I think you just described us. Literally. Andrew's, Andrew, like same exact. So Andrew is like the, I need space. I want to be respected that way. I want to like do my work, all these things. And I am just like, hold me always. Just
probably like 30 times a day. I'll hear like, Andrew, she'll be yelling from across the house. And then I'm like, all right, well, she needs something. Clearly it's urgent. And I'll go. And she's like, look at the grilled cheese I made. I'm like, all right, thank you so much, babe. Like, don't do that again.
There's like this like trending meme right now of the little kid like waddling alongside someone just because like they're so clingy. I just want to be with him all the time.
I understand that. Roxy?
So I think for me, I mean, I definitely, he and I do fight about the fact that like, I like during the workday, especially like if I text him or call him or like I walk in the room and I'm saying something that's non-urgent, he definitely gets annoyed with that because he's like, you know, I'm busy. Like, I've got to get my stuff done. But I think for me, I really need like words of affirmation. Like, I need him to speak in like a, you know, a certain tone and like not raise his voice. And like, you know, because remember, Tamman, we were talking about love languages before and I thought it was acts of service, but like, the deeper I get into therapy, the more I feel
I find out about all the crap that is Roxy and Damon.
Exactly. The more I think it's actually words of affirmation. Like I need somebody to talk to me in a certain, you know, like positive, like loving way. Does it change though? Can it change over time?
I don't know. I think it's always, I've always wanted to be held and touched, but I was going to ask Sean this question because we didn't have similar, she was an Olympian and won gold medals, but I was working at a very young age at 15 and had accolades really young, right? In Australia. So like you're on covers of magazines and was doing Pepsi at, you know, 16 years old.
Casual flex, Tamman. Casual flex. Nice.
Everyone knows that. Okay. No, and L'Oreal too, but just looking at it. But I was 16. Anyway, And then I had an album, just whatever. But when I was really young, and I think that I was walking today and I was thinking about fame at such an early age, which you had, mm-hmm. and how it really does define, like, you don't have like a normal way of growing up. And so if the whole world, right? So for you, me, it was just Australia, but for you, mm-hmm. it was the whole world. If the whole world is looking at you and giving you accolades and telling you how beautiful and amazing and how you're a star and you're winning all the time, and then that stops, you are now trained, even if you want it or don't want it, to consistently need that. And when mm-hmm. you don't get it, maybe there's a like, well, am I good enough? Do I matter? Because mm-hmm. what you went through at such a young age is, as much as we don't think it's like big trauma, but how do you navigate that when you stop competing?
Mm. I struggled with it for a very long time. I feel like exactly what you're saying. Especially within gymnastics, and I feel like it's similar to like, it's very similar to acting, because gymnastics is very subjective. There's no like whoever crosses the finish line first. Mm-hmm. So you're truly trying to put on a show for a judge and impress them in a way that gives you the highest remarks. And so I spent my whole life looking for that praise and getting the praise from judges and then having the praise from the world. And then when it was gone, I tried to find it anywhere else. I was too afraid to start over with something. So I just tried to be perfect at everything.
Yeah.
And I got criticized for it and everything. But I think one of the biggest reasons why we connected so much when we started dating was he put such an emphasis, and whether it was strategy and like your whole plan all along, I don't know. But when we first started dating, he put such an emphasis on me as a human being and mm-hmm. never talked about gymnastics and never talked about like my career or my accolades or anything. He just truly like praised to a certain extent, just who I was as a human. And I had never had that before. I had never felt like a human before him. And I felt like I was seen outside of that. And so speaking to the spouse side, yes, at the end of the day, I want Andrew to tell me that if it all went away, like he would still love me as me. And so like, I look for that. I don't care what the world says. I want to make sure at the end of the day, who I am, without having to work for that, like mm-hmm. love and affection is who he wants to be with.
Mm-hmm. We were just reading today, actually. We read a book. We try to every day. Just Sean and I connect over like philosophical conversations, like talking about stuff we haven't talked about before. Mm-hmm. And the concept was how feedback is only as important as that person who's giving it is to you. Mm-hmm. And so like, Tamin, you have millions of people that follow you. You get comments all the time about like, hey, you're pretty or whatever, but it doesn't mean anything because they don't know who you are. But your spouse, who knows mm-hmm. your deepest flaws, but also your deepest like beauties, when they give you compliments, mm-hmm. it means the world. Right. And so like mm-hmm. there is this feedback that I am responsible for giving Sean. It goes vice versa though, too. Any criticism that you get from the people that know you the best,
it's a lot harder.
It's way mm-hmm. harder, I feel like. Which actually, is that true though with social media? Like, cause so criticism of social media cuts hard too.
It cuts hard. I think it cuts hard on social media because it comes in packs.
Mm.
You're not hearing it from one person. You hear it from one Karen who then ignites the fire under the butts mm-hmm. of 1,000 Karens.
Interesting.
That doesn't feel good.
And I think it also, I've realized that criticism is the most painful when there's some truth in it. And we think that there's, when it's ridiculous comments, that's nothing. But when it's like, you need to be better at this, I realize when it, not that there's truth in it, but I believe that there's truth in it. If I'm not doing well with myself and someone says like, you know, you're just a bad mom, and I feel like I've been a bad mom, then it really gets to me. Whereas I don't think ultimately I'm a bad mom, but in that moment, if I feel like there's truth in those words, that's when I feel like it's the most painful.
I'm gonna jump in and give an example because I just had to get this off my chest. He saw this the other day. I agreeing with you. There was a Karen who made a comment the other day about both of our babies and their looks and their weight. And it like sent me into another stratosphere. But like you were saying, it's like a black and white. You can either write things off as like, oh, that's so false, I don't agree with you. But the way in which it was written, it was the comment on their weight. And then it was targeted. She said, given your background of nutrition and eating disorders and all of this, you should know better. And it was just that, like you said, part of that little click was, I should know better. Like, am I doing something wrong? Is that like trauma? And if it's not black or white, it can be very painful.
It amplifies like an existing insecurity.
Yeah, absolutely.
This got deep, guys. This got real deep.
Oh, we can get even deeper.
No, but that would, I mean, like you're saying, that would send me into another zone. Like when people have any, I mean, it's one thing if they talk about me personally, whatever, like, people, you know, they're always going to think somebody's smarter, funnier, skinnier, you know, whatever it is. But when the kid comes into play, then that's like full blown mama bear. Like, it's hard to restrain yourself and not, you know, go back at people like that. I mean, do you, or do you kind of like just let them do their thing?
I would go back at every single one of them.
You need to not.
But Andrew's like, don't give them time of day. Whatever you respond to, you'll get more of. And I just have to like repeat that. So, but yeah, he's like, they're not worth your time. And I'm like, oh, yes, they are.
Did she?
They are worth a lot of work.
Which I always respect about you.
I always, I have this, I wrote this. I used to write for Australia, like a column. And this one thing that I wrote that, I don't know where it came from, but I always remember it when it comes to hate in whatever form, is it just came to me. And it was the words, unhappiness is the fastest pipeline to hate. And as much as a person's comment about our kids' weight can send us into a trigger, have a trigger and send us into a spiral, that person hates their body and hates themselves. And feels like they're failing enough to make it their job to now go on someone's social media that they have no idea about and talk about a baby. Like that is, there's this great guy called Gary Vee, and I love him. And he says, if someone's being horrible to you on your social media, don't be sorry for you. Be like sorry for them. Like what type of human has to be so miserable to actually say those words? And I know it's easier said than done, because I go down, sometimes I just have to start deleting what I wrote, because I'm like, I'm just giving them what they want, right? But someone has to be so like disgusted in themselves to like take the time of day to do it. Again, easier said than done, but I think that that's kind of how I handle the all the trolls.
Oh my God. But there's so many of them, you know, it's like, they just like
so many, Roxy.
So many. Well, they're just people that are constantly out there. Like when you think it's like, okay, like things are kind of like getting better, somebody else jumps in, you know, it's just, it's kind of crazy. People are unhappy. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But people who are happy are clearly you guys. Mm-hmm. So just for like our audience who may not know your guys' like meeting story, how did you guys meet?
Hard work and perseverance is ultimately how I got in front of Sean. My brother actually was an Olympic cyclist, and he was at the 2012 London Olympics, bumped into Sean at some event she was at, and found out that Sean was looking at going to school at Vanderbilt, which is where I was playing football. And so I created my first social media account, Twitter, to tweet at her, got in the DMs, got the number, and then gave her a tour of Vandy. And then over the course of many, many months and many, many efforts, I finally wooed her on a first date and got a second date. And then she fell in love pretty quickly. So it worked out well.
Okay.
I like that he fought for it, you know? He really fought for that.
Between our first and second date, there were 9 months. It took 9 months for the second date.
We out here grinding, damn it. I got to put
Like, what? Why did it take 9 months? Like what? What didn't happen on the first date that you needed to wait for 9 months?
I wore my nicest outfit. I pulled out all the best jokes I had. I was a gentleman.
Wasn't good enough.
I did all the things.
I we've had this conversation so many different times, like why? And I think to a certain extent, it was just like the circumstances of time, like that exact like phase in my life. I was coming out of a very, very long-term relationship. That was like 6 years. And it was just, we were in that gray zone of like, is it completely done forever? And it was not the best relationship anyways. I was looking to move on and I met Andrew and you, like, he was incredible. But I just kept thinking, I was living in LA at the time. It was in the middle of Dancing with the Stars. We are having our first date in the middle of like dance rehearsals. And he just seemed like too good to be true. And I was like, how is this ever, ever going to work? And I was just also a massive skeptic. I didn't trust anybody. I thought he had poor intentions potentially that I couldn't see. I just a lot of scars that I couldn't get past. And then after that date, he continued pursuing me for like 9 months, like didn't give up, relentless. And finally, there was just this one turning point where he's like, this is my last chance, like last time, I promise. He's like, come to Nashville. I'll give you a tour of Vanderbilt. We'll go to the CMA Fest. I'll host you, like all these things. And I was like, whatever, sure. It can't hurt. And so I flew to Nashville. We went on an amazing like 24, 48 hour date. And I ended up calling my mom and I was like, I think this is the guy I'm going to marry. Like he, it was amazing.
I had like an itinerary built. I had a I was ready to game. Damn it.
You were ready.
He had an itinerary written out in Sharpie on a paper towel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's not, we don't need to talk about the details, the unimportant things. I had that thing written though.
You had it written.
I remember my, when my husband first kissed me, I called my mom the next day and I said, I'm going to marry this guy.
Wow.
I was on a film set and I did have a boyfriend at the time. So
Jonathan?
Well, there's a longer story to that. And you know what? I was like 20. So I feel like with 20 to like 20, maybe six, you're allowed to like kind of. So I remember the boyfriend, which it was a long story, but like I kept trying to break up with him and he was really relentless. you know the feeling, right? Relentless. He just kept like coming back and I broke up with him like 3 times. And then he kept sending me flowers because he wanted me to like get back with him again. And so I was giving the flowers to my co-star and my husband Sean was like, that girl's getting a lot of flowers. And I'm like, I don't know. And then he was the director actually, which is so wouldn't happen these days, but he was, he said, I think I'm falling in love with you the day before we started shooting. And that was it. That was it. Like never, we've never spent other than just trips, but we've never spent like a day apart. We've been together ever since.
Can I just ask, because you kind of didn't finish the sentence, you said between the age of 20 and 26, you're kind of allowed to
well, you're allowed to kind of screw up. You're allowed to screw up more, I think. Like we heard that your frontal lobe doesn't develop until you're 25 years old. So you make really poor decisions till you're about 25. So I'm just giving a little bit of like leeway, like 26, you know, like you're figured, like you're allowed to until you're 26. But at that point, I think you should be making good decisions after you're 26.
Yeah. 25, it's game on. Gotcha.
25, it's like there's no excuse, right?
It's interesting, though. Like some people do meet in their 20s and fall in love and like are in it for the long haul. I don't know. I guess it just depends on, you know, different people. Like, but it's cool when you find somebody at that age and you know you're going to stick together, you know, like. But I do love how you guys are so open and honest on your podcast. I was listening to an episode yesterday and you guys really openly talk about the things that bug each other about the other one. And I was cracking up because you guys are so open and honest. But what is kind of the thing that really like you knew, like sealed the deal? Like, this is the person I'm going to marry. Like, what was the quality in each other?
I have a thought, but I would say for me, the first thing that comes to mind, there's many things, but we were that story. So we met when we were 21. We got married at 24.
Yeah.
At 24. Wow. And I think the thing for me was there wasn't anything we couldn't get through or not even couldn't get through, but wouldn't try to get through. And because we were so young when we got married, it was hard. Like we were going, he was finishing up college, bouncing around the NFL. I was going from not working back into the working field. Mm. We were traveling apart for months at a time. We did the long distance. We did so many different things. We went through miscarriages. We went through, like, everything. Mm. And I think because we were so young, it was just sticky and it was hard, but we just tried our best through all of it. And I think that quality I saw when we were dating, because there were a lot of roadblocks and hurdles to get through when we were dating, and just nothing fazed either of us. Mm. It was like, okay, let's figure out how to get through this one.
The term that comes to mind is curiosity. Is like this. I like saw Sean smile on our first date. The only time the whole night that she smiled was like the very end.
Oh my God.
Which she was just.
I sound like a she was good.
And she was like, and I was like, oh my God.
She really made you work for it.
Oh, you. She works. She's just scaring me.
Really, I'm not that funny. But anyway, I was like, oh my gosh, I would love to. That's a freaking beautiful smile. I want to like see more of that. And then it was like this curiosity about her being so talented, so ambitious, but having like this unbelievable humility, or like meekness maybe is a term. And it was just like so it was just like interesting. I'd never met someone like her. It was always, hey, I'm really good at something and I'm gonna like throw it in your face, or I don't know, I'm not good at anything and I'm not confident at all, or like, I don't know, just like there was some quality that made me super curious. And I feel like for the most part that's been preserved, thank goodness.
But still peeling back the layers. Mm-hmm.
But was it at all intimidating for you, Andrew, coming in? Because you knew, I mean, you yourself had a very big NFL career. You did so much. And then you're also coming in and you're meeting Sean, who is like this, you know, worldly, you know, recognized like Olympian, you know, and all the things. Was that kind of intimidating to come into?
One quality from my dad that I adopted, Roxy, mm-hmm. is like an unproportionate and unwarranted amount of confidence, maybe arrogance. I'm not sure which is, I was actually more pumped. Like, I think I'm in the middle of five kids. Like the position I played in football was like very much a supporting cast member. So like, I feel like this is just in line with a lot of that stuff. And it gets me pumped up. Like, I think it's way more fun for me to hype my wife up than it is for like me to hype myself up. That being said, when I entered the NFL, I was like, as you know, as happens, people call me Andrew Johnson, or like I'm really known as Sean's husband. But I like walked in the NFL. I was like, finally, it's my time. Like, people are going to know who Andrew is. And sure enough, that's not how it panned out. Everyone is still like, you know, all the questions are about Sean and everyone just wants to meet her. And thank goodness for that. Otherwise, I would have the largest head on the planet, probably. So.
I will say something that was really refreshing and interesting within our relationship, and rightfully so, is like his family is the most amazing, most close-knit, protective, amazing family ever. And when I was introduced into the picture, that whole scene, like the gymnastics Hollywood world, was a major red flag to the whole family. Like, they had major conversations with me of like, what are your intentions here? And like, we have to be very careful bringing all of this in unless it's for a good purpose. And I had never experienced that before. A lot of people live for that. They live for notoriety. And it was just, I loved it. I was like, okay, this is different. But
yeah, they really cared, which is important. I was like, do I have that with my husband's family? No, I think they're still like trying to talk about Pretty Little Liars at this point. They don't care. So again, this morning when I was walking, I was thinking about like what makes someone have drive and ambition and succeed, right? And in my small world, like, you know, I can talk myself out of anything and put myself down. But then when the rubber meets the road and there's like 20 cameras on and I have a monologue and there's 2 minutes left before the end of the day. And if I don't get this monologue, everyone's going into overtime and it's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. When they say action, something within me clicks and it's like another world. And I'm like, I'm on, right? All the stuff that happened before doesn't matter. I'm like in it. And I thought it has to be the same when it comes to what you did when you're like, when you're looking at that beam, what is it that you're thinking? Because you can't think, oh gosh, I hope I don't fall. Like you can't, that can't be an option, right? You have to just think about winning. So, so what goes on in your brain when like that sound goes off and it's like your turn? Like, what is that? What is that?
Trying to put words to it, words to literally what you just explained. It's like something clicks. It's like the whole world drowns out and you just go into a different world. I don't know. I think for the bigger thing there is just the love that I had for gymnastics. And I worked so hard at it and I had just this passion. And when it came to those moments of performance, whether it was at the Olympics or whatever it was, you have those little voices in your head. But like when it's time to perform, I would take a deep breath and I'd be like, in the most chill way possible, so I didn't start freaking out. I'd be like, you got this. And then just noticing exactly like you said, you're about to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars if you go overtime and all these things. Mm-hmm. You could see the stakes on the line. And I loved it. I lived for it. It was like, okay, this is my moment.
Sean was a stone cold killer. Gets me hyped, dude. Let's go.
It truly is that ability to just, it's a game. It's a competitive game that you kind of play with yourself. It's like, can you do this?
Mm-hmm.
And I just always wanted to prove myself wrong.
But there's also like life and death. Like what you're doing, you could die from.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And there's like, I know you can't think of that, but there has to be, I watch some of these that show Cheer and I'm like, oh my god, they're gonna break their necks. But you can't think of the fear or you will hurt yourself, right? You've just got to throw it all in. And that's just a huge lesson in just life in general. You gotta it's all in, right?
Yes. And in full transparency, that's why I retired from the sport. Is there is something that clicks within your sport, your passion, whatever, and especially within gymnastics, if you aren't all in gymnastics, you get hurt and you get hurt bad. Mm-hmm. And I competed for almost 20 years and I walked into the gym one day and I could just tell that my heart wasn't in it anymore because I started thinking about all the different things that could go wrong instead of being challenged by what I could achieve. And I just knew in that day, it was like, my time's done here. Mm.
And knowing,
it wasn't worth it.
Mm-hmm. And knowing what you know now, I mean, you obviously know what it takes to be an Olympian and to be a winner and to be so committed to your passion as a parent. Like, is that something that you would encourage, you know, your kids to go into? Or if there is an interest there, is that something that you would kind of, you know, let them follow if that was the passion?
We've talked about this a lot. And honestly, at the end of the day, we could care less. Mm. If it's gymnastics that they choose, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I have no attachment to them in gymnastics at all. If anything, I would almost push them away selfishly because I don't ever want them to feel like they have a pressure to follow in my footsteps.
Mm.
They being kids should be allowed to fail miserably at anything that they try and not be expected to succeed. But we feel an immense amount of pressure to give them every opportunity to find something that they love and to kind of like create their own world. I don't know.
Do you guys like flip to go get coffee in the morning?
Yeah. Yeah, cartwheels the whole way.
Yeah.
I would kind of like, if I was married to an Olympian, I'd be like, just stop. Like, stop walking to the kid. Can you just like, this is embarrassing. Can you do like something cool? Yeah, I'm sure you're over like the party tricks. You're like, oh, guys, I'm done. I'm not doing a backflip. I can't even do a handstand. That's true.
We can fix it. I can teach you.
I can't even ride a bike. I'm serious.
You've never ridden a bike, Tam?
We're gonna start there. Well, we're gonna fix that.
I want to go on a double date. Us four riding e-bikes. That's what we'll do. Yeah.
Look, I can ice skate and I can rollerblade and I can horse ride. I'm telling you all the things I can do, so you don't see all the things I can't. But I've never learned to ride a bike because I don't understand when you're on the bike, you just fall. Like you just like.
That's what the pedals are for.
No, that's but then you press the brake and then you fall.
But you put your feet down.
I know, but then I'd always have to put my feet down because I can't keep it upright.
Yes.
Look, I'm talking to an Olympian who obviously can ride a bike and an AF, like an NFL. Like you guys obviously.
We know where you live now. We're gonna deliver a brand new bike to you and we're gonna
I have a bike. I literally got one for my birthday because I was like, I'm gonna learn how to ride.
Make sure it has training wheels and then you go from there, right? You
coming start over
pedaling and yeah.
I'm just it's not it's embarrassing. Anyway.
And please videotape it and put it on stories.
Yeah, I was actually thinking of because you guys have a YouTube, which we had, but it was so much work. It's so much work, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, this is going to be my start back to YouTube is riding a bike and everyone laughing at me. And then I was like, oh, but then I have to make more videos. So, so let's talk about your YouTube. Yeah. I think the first video I saw of yours, which is kind of went viral, was the video that you guys, where you talked about your miscarriage. Is that sort of was the genesis of getting into, was that when everything sort of started to pick up?
Kind of yes and no. We've been doing YouTube for 7 years, and didn't really have a purpose on YouTube until that video. That video was nothing we ever planned on posting. Mm-hmm. Even when we were filming that whole process, we never intended for anyone to see it but us. Mm-hmm. But that was the first video that we did post, and we kind of learned a whole new world of social media where things could be. Like it could be a two-way street where it's not just serving people content, but it is actually building a community and helping people through things. And so from then we felt more purpose in what we are producing and creating and trying to connect with people on.
I find oftentimes too, especially with social media, like your purpose changes, right? Because it's like you kind of go in maybe at the beginning, even like not really knowing, you know, you're kind of throwing things up on the wall, you know, see what sticks. And then now, you know, something sticks and it kind of sets your direction. So what was kind of the first most, you know, like the most popular, like the viral video that kind of set the trajectory for you guys?
That was definitely like a pivot point.
Okay.
The video she just mentioned, but oh man, Sean has so much attention brought to whatever she does. I remember the first video we posted, we were trying to like, we've never freaking filmed anything. I don't know what I'm doing. I did civil engineering in college, whatever. And it was like, actually it's kind of like this. We had like 40 pillows behind us who, why you need this many pillows? I don't know why, but there was a Sports Illustrated article about like, Sean was really one of the first quote unquote mainstream personalities to have like a YouTube channel that had traction. So Sports Illustrated wrote this article about like, why does Sean Johnson have so many pillows in a YouTube video? Anyway, so there's little moments. But yeah, it's been fun to see how our content and our interests have changed. And fortunately, like we're not as tied to like, hey, we have to create the most trendy YouTube video as we are doing and recording stuff that we're interested in. Like we've always viewed it as home videos that we share with the world. So like we just did one training like an astronaut. And so like we're doing a little challenge series where we do stuff like that. So yeah, it's been fun. We've made a lot of pivots.
It's so hard to be vulnerable, like in general, that I really do admire people who are able to be vulnerable in social media because there is such a backlash sometimes. And you know, I had many, many, many miscarriages. And I remember seeing that video and being like, I felt less alone, which is wasn't probably your, well, was the intention, but it was probably to show people what you were going through, which then helps other people feel like they're not the only ones. But I've never been able to share about my miscarriages really because I still feel like I kind of failed in a way, you know, like, and if I just forgave myself, even though I know I didn't do it. Mm-hmm. I didn't, the fetuses weren't compatible with life, mm-hmm. but I feel like if I just forgave myself, then maybe I'd be able to talk about it. But I always thought that like I was the problem, you know? So that's why I just don't talk about it. And when you see videos like that, it reaches far and wide and it really does make people feel like it's okay to share, mm-hmm. you know?
That up until that moment, truly within our entire relationship, my life, I had the mentality of like my gymnast self, which is you never show weakness. You never show vulnerability. Perfection is the only standard. And sharing something like that with the world was 100% out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But I distinctly remember sitting in the doctor's office when he was kind of like debriefing us. And it felt like a knife went through my heart when he said, I need you to look at me and I need you to hear me when I say this. You did not do this.
Yeah.
And I truly felt like I was like a puddle on the floor and I tried to like keep myself composed. I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank you. But I died inside because
yeah,
I felt exactly like you said it. The only thing that I could continue saying, or it was on repeat in my head, was I must be unfit to be a mother. If I can't even like get through pregnancy, how can I like, you know, I had all of these things and I felt the same way. And I had no clue how to find those words for him. Mm-hmm. And I had no clue how to talk to Andrew about it. I had no clue how to like explain it. And I pushed to post that video because I was desperate. I was desperate to find, I just kept thinking maybe there's someone out there that can like DM me or whatever. And that was the only reason why we posted it, is I was desperate and hopeful that maybe there was someone else that I could talk to. Mm-hmm. And I just remember sitting there reading thousands of comments from other people's stories saying, I don't feel so alone. Thank you. Like all of these things. And I healed from it that way. But
sorry you went through that though, Tamin.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I say to Roxy, we talk about it on the show, but I said that it wasn't until I had my second baby that I could even mention that I had a miscarriage, because mm-hmm. it was this weird thing about if I talked about the miscarriage before the baby, then maybe that was my final story. Mm-hmm. Like maybe that was the ending. Like I'd spoken that into existence. Like I had my first, I had the miscarriages, and poor old Tamin, she can't have another baby, you know? Mm-hmm. So then when I had my second, who was an accident, so there has to be a God, because we were told to not try anymore because my body had just been through so many pregnancies. So we didn't try and we used protection, and she's very loud and in this world. So I keep saying it's from the postman, but I don't know. I honestly cannot tell you. When they're like, when did you conceive this baby? I'm like, I have no clue. Like I don't, from tracking everything, ovulation, and knowing exactly when you were trying to get pregnant, to like having no clue when your baby or how your baby even came. She was like a miracle. But it wasn't until she was here was I okay to speak about it. And I feel like that with a lot of things, like my eating disorder, until I was fully recovered, it was until I was in full recovery that I was able to talk about it, because it was, I think it's really hard to talk about things when you're in the pain of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look back and you're like, oh, now I can help people. But
absolutely.
But it's eating disorders, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's so good that, you know, everybody, that you guys are both speaking about these things, because they do need to be talked about. And we're at that point now where I think things are becoming more open, which is great. But also wanted to talk to you about vulnerability, because vulnerability is one of the things that is hard for me. And I know, just being such public people, you know, people are constantly, you know, looking at you and all the things. But on top of that, you actually also had a stalker, you know, 10 or so yes. years ago. So I really, really commend you guys for being so open and honest, because for me, I know that would be maybe triggering for me, like a little harder for me. I'd be even a little more closed. So what was it like? Was that ever even a thought, like, about, you know, being so open and honest with your audience? Or did that not really even come into play? Were you always just going to be, you know, vulnerable and open?
It was what?
Nothing.
It was definitely a conversation. It was, I was very reserved. I was very perfection driven, where I didn't want to be vulnerable at all. And he was the opposite. He wanted to show as much vulnerability, because he saw he thought the two different people that I had become in kind of showing my game face and then showing my real person, mm-hmm. he didn't like the difference. And we struggled with that in our relationship. So he wanted to show the world who we were and our actual vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And we just had to work through that, like where the boundaries were and how to kind of like replace them. Mm-hmm. But I feel like now being outside of like, kind of like we were talking about the eating disorders and miscarriage and like mm-hmm. all of that, I feel like all of that pain came from a world that was filled with so much unrelatable perfection that for mm-hmm. us, we feel like we're trying to help more people by being more vulnerable.
How do you feel now? Like, how do you, now that you've gone through your everything that you've achieved, where are you now with yourself? Like, do you feel like you're in a place of radical acceptance and self-love, or are you still navigating that? And it will always be a process based in how you grew up.
Both. I feel like I'm definitely more on the side of like acceptance. And I think that just comes with being a mom, because mm-hmm. I have this thing on repeat in my mind of whatever I'm doing to myself or saying to myself, my daughter's going to witness and our son's going to witness. Mm-hmm. So I think it's constantly a journey of like bettering the voices in my head and bettering my self-image. But I do feel like I've gotten to a point of pretty good self-acceptance, mm-hmm. good, bad, or ugly.
If I can chime in as having the honor of being on the front row seat of how mm-hmm. you've grown and changed, mm-hmm. I think that's been a really fun process to watch, as you not perfect by any means, but like, yeah, I think acceptance and joy like has been way more prevalent, as opposed to, it's crazy. Like when you're thinking about yourself, that perspective is so small, and there's mm-hmm. certainly plenty of flaws we can all find about ourselves, but like, that's why we try to take like a service trip a year. Like, we go and build houses in Mexico. We're doing one in October. And it's like,
you guys want to come?
Like, take your perspective off of you and all the nonsense. Like, I don't know. It can just kind of get drowned out by you realizing that there's more to the world than like just yourself. So it's kind of a good reminder sometimes, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was that thing, Tamman? We were talking about this on another show. Is like, we think we get, and it's natural. It's human nature, right? To think that if somebody is, you know, saying whatever negative things about you, you know, you take it personally. But really, in the world, it's not that important, right? It's like, and also, what matters, if it doesn't matter in 5 minutes, like, don't give it the time. Like, don't sit. I'm sorry, if it doesn't matter in 5 years. Don't give it the time.
Or 5 minutes.
5 minutes now. Or 5 minutes. Exactly. Like, why? But it's, you know, I mean, it's a day by day thing, I think, you know, some days you're more equipped to deal with it better than others, you know?
And I think about death so much. This is such a lovely, lovely chat. I like think about it all the time. And I think about it when I get quiet. So I try not to get quiet. Like, I spend a lot of my life like being super busy. Because if I get quiet, then I actually have to like hear my own voice. And at nighttime, like right before I go to sleep, I think about it and it freaks me out. No matter what people believe happens after death, it's like there's obviously what we believe and there's faith, but there's still like that doesn't sometimes feel that comfortable. And I think about that a lot. And it doesn't mean a spiral, but it also really helps me think like, well, if this is all you've got for this finite period of time, mm-hmm. then like balls to the wall, man, like just live your life, like go have the best, like, what is it? These mm-hmm. little moments about my husband walking in, not being like, oh my God, I'm so excited to see you. Like, who cares? Like, I know he loves me. Let's move on. Like, just that reminder that we don't have all this time, you know, like we don't. And it's funny, when I had my kids, I made peace with death a bit more, because they're so here, which means that they were so close, and they're so young, but they were so close to not being here. Mm. So like, they're closer to knowing what it's like So that's why I think babies are so awesome, because they're like, yo, like I was somewhere else and now I'm here. Like, that's why I think, I don't know. That's why you look at babies and you're like, they just know so much, but then they can't, maybe they, that's the reason why they can't talk, because they can't tell you what they just remembered.
We talked about that a lot. I mean, we are believers in our faith and like the Christian faith. So that completely set aside, having the philosophical like conversation of faith in people who argue science and everything, to a certain extent, it's natural to have doubt, even us. But the second we had our kids, it is like the truest form of a miracle that I have ever experienced in my entire life. And you can only ask so many questions before it's like, it's literally just a miracle. It's a miracle.
I mean, I think there's always two ways of looking at something. And it's like, at some point you could just say, hey, either of these could be compelling stories to tell myself. And I don't know. I think there's something
a better one. Yeah.
Whimsical about faith, but I actually challenge you, Tam. And I think you should think about, I don't think it's a bad thing to think about death. There's I think there's a progression that I've seen people I respect go through where it's like, yeah, I absolutely balls to the walls. And that probably has its own kind of sequence of events where it's like, hey, balls to the walls, like, let me just live up all my dreams and desires. But then you probably reach a point where you're like, okay, well, nothing actually is really that exciting to me anymore. Like, I've done the skydiving and went to Ibiza and did ayahuasca and whatever. But then it's like, okay, we're all going to die. So what is like, what would make a good life? And there's some part of like legacy of like pouring into other people where it's like, hey, let me try to mentor someone, or let me try to serve here, or let me try to like create, like impact my family in a meaningful way. That like, I think thinking about death in a finite way is really helpful. It's almost like it's like appreciating a sunset. Like if a sunset was always just there, you wouldn't appreciate it. It is the fact that it ends.
Right.
Almost unlocks a certain beauty, you know?
And when I said balls to the wall, what I meant was
YOLO.
Now I have to like really explain what I meant. Balls to the wall. Like, for example, I've always wanted to write a book, right? Not for me, but just to help people or whatever it is, or to give back. And my husband and I are artists. So when I mean balls to the walls, like, stop having self-doubt, just make art, like, leave your legacy. My husband's the most beautiful writer, and he's doing a movie that took him like a decade to make. But I think some of it's just timing, but it's also self-doubt. And it's like, go write your movies, go write your screenplays, go tell your stories, because those stories, you know, I think art brings us so close in so many ways and really does connect and leaves some kind of legacy, small or big. But I'm like, go tell your stories, like, go to Montana if he wants to, and go write his, and that's how he shows like magic, you know, is creating that. And so balls to the wall meant not actual balls to the wall, meant just to like go for it.
Yeah,
I like it.
Not have the self-doubt. And
it's even just like putting the energy out there too, because it's not even necessarily the end goal of, you know, this is going to be published or this is going to be like big or what have you. It's just putting the energy out there, right? And letting it pour out of you, because inevitably that's going to attract more of what you want and like more of what you're looking for. And I think for me, at least, I like, things that hold me back sometimes is like, you know, I think too far ahead almost. And it's like, oh, well, this has to be like perfect, because then this has to like reach this goal or that goal, versus like just starting to do it, right? Yeah. Just like getting out there and doing it, right?
Well, that's the title of this podcast, guys. Just do it. Just do it. With the East. I hope you're fine with that title, because that is what it's going to be. No, that's not true. The title is podcast.
Prefer balls to the wall.
Balls to the wall. We appreciate you guys coming on the show. We adore you, and I'm definitely going to hang out at your doorstep. I don't even care if you're like, I have a new stalker who is this weird person. I'll be like, it's just me. It's not a DM stalker.
I'll DM you my number.
You'll finally accept my
respond to a message.
And I'll bring my bike and the helmet.
Yes.
Don't forget the training wheels.
This was fun, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Having you guys. We're so excited.
And where can everyone find you?
Sean Johnson and Andrew East on socials and the East Fam on YouTube.
Amazing. 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 Well, we loved having you guys chat with us and we hope you guys will come back soon.
We will.
And great. Thanks guys so much. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, and comment. We are Women on Top Official on Instagram.
And Women on Top Podcast on Facebook.
I am Tamin Sursok.
And I am Roxy Manning.
And we are, don't worry guys, there's a song here. Women on...
Okay, East.
Top!
Woo!